All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are back. It's another beautiful Wednesday. Spring is just around the corner, and it's in the zone. We're going to talk to you about quite a few things today. It's going to be a little bit different compared to our normal pace. We got some wrestling that we got to talk about. We're going to talk about the Leafs. The six-game heater unfortunately ended last night against Vegas at home after their amazing road trip. And of course, we got the NHL trade deadline around the corner, knocking on that door. So we're going to get into it. We're going to start with some wrestling. Alino and Chris, I'm going to have you guys start with that. It was quite the pay-per-view. We talked a bit about it last week. I'm going to have you guys chime in on some of the results, what we think is going to happen, and then we're going to move on. All right, Alino, after you, my man.
Yeah, so this event for, I guess, the North American fans, we got to...
It sucked.
Yeah, if we had to feel like what it was like if you're in the UK, their pain of midnight, 2 a.m., so feel bad for them. I understand now. But yeah, this event, from what I saw, flowed pretty well. Four matches. They had a long segment that could have been an email with Grayson Waller and Cody and Seth. So, Chris, what do you think of just the outcomes of some of these matches? I know there was a big surprise there with the men's elimination chamber.
Yeah, I think with the overall show, it was fine. I think the main thing we got out of it was predictable, right? Like, yeah. Becky Lynch winning, we all saw, we said 2 weeks ago, don't even have the chamber match. If anything, have it for the IC title, build up Gunther's reign a little more. And they didn't do that, but I got to give the crowd credit. I mean, I think they all knew what the result was going to be. I thought it would have been a little more interesting if maybe instead of a Raquel being in it, you could put Jade Cargill in it, kind of see how she's about going into WrestleMania. But we all know that some superstars, when it comes to Mania, they like the mystique factor, you know, not seeing a lot of them. It was kind of like Jericho back in 2012 when, like, he didn't really do much in-ring work before the Punk match. There's just a lot of different things that I think could have gone a little better in this match specifically. I think I got to be honest, man. I think Tiffany Stratton and Liv Morgan got robbed here. I think these two have really bright futures. Liv Morgan, a lot of people forget, she's still relatively young. And I think a lot of people wanted to see Rhea Ripley and Liv Morgan. They have that history. They used to be a tag team. We saw actually Rhea Ripley start her heel turn by turning on Liv Morgan. So I think that would have been cool. We all know that Becky Lynch is, like, she's the man. She has that aura about her. But I just feel like the build is kind of lacked. And I think seeing Liv Morgan, it would have been a little more refreshing.
I agree. And mentioned Tiffany Stratton there, like, there was always that big thing about NXT 2.0, and talk about Cody crybabies. Let's talk about the little NXT crybabies. They're going away from the indie style. What are they doing with all these athletes? This is why they're doing that, because Tiffany Stratton's a perfect example. Athlete coming in, like all these other freak athletes from college come in, they teach them how to wrestle, have an aura about them, instead of the same, like, copy-paste indie guys. So I think she's a product of NXT 2.0, of why Shawn Michaels is the man down there, the head booker in charge. And I'm with you there. Like, Tiffany Stratton, if anything, she became a huge star after this event.
Yeah, and, you know, you talk about, like, auras. I've talked so many times about the freaking potential that Lacey Evans had. You know, she used to be, I think, a soldier or something like that. And, you know, you carry it over. She didn't have a lot of training. And it's like, okay, she's already been in main events with Becky Lynch. Remember that tag team with Corbin. And it's like, okay, maybe you give her a shot. She never ended up getting that shot. But when you look at Tiffany Stratton, you look at just how athletic she is. You look at the look. She looks like, you know, like that girly girl. You can get behind, like, she's like a Charlotte Flair kind of. I hope she's not like Charlotte Flair in terms of winning belts left fucking right. Give another superstar a chance, but I agree with you, man. I think Tiffany Stratton, the you know what? The women's division is in great hands, considering I'd want to say 5 years ago, we kept getting the same four. So, you know, you have Raquel's a new face. You know, you have Tiffany Stratton, you have Io Sky, you have Dakota Kai, you have a lot of different faces coming up. Even in NXT, there's a lot of the young ones that are just, man, they're killing it down there. So I think Tiffany Stratton was like the X factor for the match. She obviously over-delivered. She was amazing in it. And I just, again, like, I feel sorry for Raquel. I feel sorry for Naomi, as they just were kind of afterthoughts. As it targeted around three women. The three women that were targeted, it was great. But I still think we had questions that were yet to be answered after for Liv and Tiffany.
Speaking of questions, AJ Styles attacks LA Knight of all people. It looks like they're going to feud going into WrestleMania. To me, my initial reaction was it's kind of underwhelming, not because of like who they are, but like their styles I don't think really would mesh well. Do you think AJ should be facing somebody else at WrestleMania?
I think both guys deserve better, to be honest with you. And now you look at AJ's resume at WrestleMania, it's the definition of underwhelming. He's just been feeded singles matches. That's it. Like, the only important one he had was when he retained against Shinsuke, and even that heel turn just never fucking went anywhere. So I remember AJ, that feud, that was one of the longest dragged feuds of all time. Like, he just won every single match. LA Knight, we saw what it was like October. His stardom was at a whole different level. The yeah chance and all that. He also deserves better. He's had a great year, and I'm not discrediting either guy here, but just what does this amount to? Just a singles match at WrestleMania? I guarantee you, I think LA Knight is winning it. I think he has to win more than AJ. But people forget AJ is getting old. I think this is probably his last couple of years. The way he looks, his physique, why don't you give him another shot? Maybe give him a chance at Gunther. Like, I thought that was always in the cards. If it wasn't Jey Uso or Sami Zayn or someone like that, I think AJ Styles would have been a great WrestleMania match for Gunther, because we all knew it was supposed to be Brock, but that fell through. I obviously understand that we've seen the build on SmackDown, but to me, it just, for both guys, no sense at all.
Yeah, and you look at AJ, he's like in a lot of people's minds, like Shawn Michaels for like these last decade. Like, so LA Knight, like, imagine there's a free agent out there, Kazuchika Okada. That would have been like a big thing if he came over. Him and AJ of history, that would have been a nice one-off match. But I don't know, like LA Knight 2 title match, I think they're missing the whole thing with him too.
Yeah, because the whole rumor, right, was Cena, Logan Paul. I remember that was like the main thing for the longest time. And then LA Knight gets hot. He has that tag team match with John Cena. And then it's, okay, is maybe LA Knight going to go on a collision course with Logan Paul? That's at least what I thought. Again, it doesn't happen. And you're just kind of looking at LA Knight, and it's like, were these last 4 or 5 months, even half a year, a waste? Just to maybe put AJ over, or have AJ put LA Knight over? Because what's the end game here for LA Knight? That's, I think, the biggest question. Nick's a big fan of LA Knight. I'm a big fan. I just don't know, in terms of his wrestling ability, how far he can go. Because, again, oh, Chris, look at The Miz. He's not the greatest in-ring wrestler, but he's a two-time Grand Slam. I mean, LA Knight has the potential, but just based on, you know, you have Roman Reigns, you have Cody Rhodes, you have Seth Rollins, you have Drew McIntyre, like, you have all these guys that are just on top of their game right now. I don't know what the long-term game is, man, for LA Knight. And this feud doesn't do anything for either of them.
Another guy I feel bad for here, that his WrestleMania seems out of the loop in some ways, Austin Theory, 2 years ago. Vince McMahon's guy, his pride, like, crown jewel is Austin Theory. Goes in Pat McAfee. Big match there. Stone Cold gets involved at the end. Last year, John Cena, kickoff WrestleMania. He beats John Cena clean. This year, Grayson Waller's lackey. What the hell are they doing with this guy?
You know what it is, man? He has not evolved. And you could say it's creative. You could say whatever you want. But I look at it as, this might be a hot take. You look at so many guys in the past. The Alex Rileys, the Mark Jindraks, the Ted DiBiases, these guys, they had so much potential, and you just look at the circumstances, kind of how they were built. I mean, I always thought Theory was going to be a main event star just because of, you know, Vince McMahon being there and all that, but Vince is not there anymore. I don't know if it was maybe too early, but it's looking that way. I mean, he had a hell of a year in 2022. You know, winning the Money in the Bank, cashing in, even at times flirting with cashing in when it was Brock and Roman Reigns. You know, he had that spotlight, but as of right now, it's safe to say, man, he might have to do what Corbin did. He might have to go back down. I think you have a feud with Carmelo Hayes. You have a feud with Trick Will. I think that could bolster him. We all saw Sean Spears just return last night. I think he can maybe feud with him. There's options. I'm not saying it's out of reach right now for Theory. I think he still has hope, but like you said, man, it is a big drop off for Theory.
The final one, that we're going to get to. A drop-off. Randy Orton and Logan Paul for the U.S. title. Like, is Randy's career now where he's going for mid-card titles at WrestleMania?
I hope not. It's just, again, like I said, Roman and Rock and Seth, they're doing this whole storyline together, so it's hard to incorporate Randy in that. But time is ticking for him. I would have loved to have seen him maybe get his 15th world title, maybe Cena get his 17th down the line. Maybe that's just the kid in me talking, but I got to give Logan Paul his flowers. He, like, as much as everybody hates the guy, he put in the work. He's really, really improved. We saw the Ricochet spot at the Rumble. He's an athletic freak. That's just how it is with Logan Paul. I think Logan has the ability to carry a match. I don't think it'll be like Rollins and Randy was at WrestleMania 31. I think it'll be maybe a little bit more botchy, but you have to have Randy win this.
Yeah.
I just think it makes the most sense to have Randy win. But then again, you look at it, Randy's not a mid-card champion. I at least don't think so. All the praise, all the hype around his Survivor Series return just to have him win the U.S. title. I think there's more down the line. I think if they're smart, Alino, you have CM Punk win the world title whenever he comes back, and then you have Randy Orton inject an old feud with Punk, bring back this nostalgia, and he gets the result. So I think long-term, I want to see Randy versus Punk for the world title. I don't know if it'll happen. We also know Drew has history with Randy, so I know Randy right now is in a tough spot with Logan, but I think long-term end game, he won't be mid-card.
You know who reportedly re-signed with WWE? Drew McIntyre, new contract extension.
Fucking right.
What do you think of this character Drew's got coming out here? Does he have to win the title? Now, I'm sure that was probably part of the agreement. Like, I'm going over WrestleMania.
Absolute menace. He is on a tear of a lifetime right now. What he did on Raw was amazing. Like, crossing his legs in the ring like Punk. We all know, I think if there's one thing that we've learned with all the Roman and Brock feuds, you know that there's going to be a predictable match at SummerSlam, and this SummerSlam, it's Punk and Drew McIntyre. I think that's a lock for SummerSlam. I'm okay with it. I think Punk, I wouldn't maybe have him win, but at the same time, how do you have Punk lose? Yeah. So Drew is going to be in for a very, very fun 2024. He already has. I think he has to beat Seth Rollins just based on Seth's promo on Raw. Basically him saying, maybe my knee, my back isn't 100%. Maybe he has an excuse, you know, the tag team match made me lose. We'll never know, but this is Drew's time. I feel it. I believe in him. He's going to be carrying Raw as that top heel, I want to say, for at least half a year. So I think he wins the world title at WrestleMania. Absolutely deserving, especially after Seth saying on Raw, you know, buddy, you had your moment, but it was in a freaking empty arena. So I think he kind of hinted it there. I think Drew gets his moment. And honestly, man, I would not be surprised if the cheers outweigh the boos.
I like it.
Yeah. So that's it for wrestling. Nick, if you want to start going on about our boy, John Tavares, we saw a little bit of change with the line combinations. Kind of discuss that for us.
It was definitely different watching the game last night, and even some of the games on the road trip that they just had. You know, you're watching the game, everything seems status quo, and it was nice. We were getting some depth scoring from some of the lesser known or the less expected guys to really start, you know, contributing to this lineup, and all of a sudden John Tavares is on the third line.
Damn.
I mean, you know, he had those few games where he was out with injury or illness, whatever it was, and he came back and he looked like he's really found his legs. And, you know, we needed that boost from him, and it really showed in those six games that we were on the road. But coming back last night, seeing him on the third line and against a Vegas team that not that many days before, we absolutely beat the brakes off of them in their own barn. What the Leafs really got a taste of last night was what it takes to win a Stanley Cup against an actual defending champ and a team that might not be playing their best hockey, but a team that is going to make it hard for you to win. And it showed last night that they weren't up to do that. And the line combinations, I guess, were a part of that, because There was a part of them where they looked really flat at times and they looked like they had no inspiration creating anything offensively. But you got to give credit to Vegas because Vegas literally was blocking everything and anything that was heading in Aiden Hill's direction last night. Like it was insane, but it was definitely different. I don't think Johnny T on the third line is your answer. I know we said this year with how slow he had looked that he might need to go on the third line and then getting those contributions that made some sense. But last night, if that was an inclination going forward, knowing how tight the playoff race is getting, you can't have him on the third line. You just can't. I know you got to spread out the centers, but you can't have him on the third line.
Yeah, $11 million on your third line center. That's either like, you know what, John Tavares, do you want to get traded somewhere? Because we can't have like $11 million at center, number three. Like maybe on the wing on the second line, but I didn't like that when I saw him on third line center on the graphic on TSN.
I just think I get the displeasure of him being on the third line, but I actually like the move, man, because I'll tell you this. Max Domi and Bertuzzi the last like five games have been on fire. And I've discredited and I've actually bashed Sheldon Keefe a lot for not changing the lineup. I got to give him credit here, man. Like you put Bertuzzi and Domi in a really good spot with Willie as your right winger and they've been producing. So, and again, John Tavares on the third line, we see how good Bobby McMahon has been the last week. He's with Bobby McMahon. I think, again, it is weird to see JT on the third line. It's just something that we're not accustomed to. But I think this is also Sheldon Keefe trying to get the best out of Nick Robertson, too. Because Nick Robertson is on the wing with Tavares. We see Robertson's on the second power play. They're really trying with Nick Robertson. And I have to appreciate Keefe for that because it seemed like every year around this time, Robertson is either in the minors, not playing, or injured. So it's good to see him out there getting that opportunity. I agree with you guys in terms of the salary because you can't be getting $11 million on the third. That's just not acceptable. But I do like how he adjusted. He's seeing how great McMahon is. He sees the confidence in him, and he's trying to get Robertson going. So if you could have three great lines going for the Leafs, they can beat almost any team. They could pump any team any night. We saw it last week against Vegas. Is one, I think they're a top five metric defensive team. We put four up in the first period.
Yeah.
So if the Leafs are on their A game, they're forechecking with purpose, they are a deadly team. I think this is why Sheldon Keefe is putting JT with McMahon. He just wants to see how much he can get out of those young guys.
Yeah, I see that to a degree, Chris. But the thing is, it's like trade deadline's around the corner. A lot of this feels like if this is the case, you're going to put, you know, a franchise guy, one of the all-time centermen to play in the league, you know, John Tavares, with a guy that you're possibly going to trade. So there's that to think of as well.
That could be a reason.
And
boost his value.
Yeah, and yeah. I also do think, though, you're also taking away a lot of creative ability in terms of what can be created from that second line. Sure, Tyler Bertuzzi's finally caught fire.
Thank God.
Max Domi's finally getting some lucky bounces go his way and the puck's going in the net because he's brought it all year. Max has brought it all year on every asset and aspect of his game.
He's probably our best forechecker between him and Kampf. I think those are our two best forecheckers.
And, you know, now Max is finally getting puck luck. It's finally going his way. So he's scoring goals. He's in the right place at the right time. And he's also bringing that heart and that character that this team desperately needs.
Absolutely.
But the problem is, though, is that, okay, some people might argue you're paying William Nylander all this money. He should be more than enough to create goal opportunities for these guys. But ultimately, William Nylander shouldn't have to be creating goals for Max Domi and Tyler Bertuzzi. William Nylander should be scoring goals on the second line. You know, like, you're not turning him all of a sudden into a bona fide second line centerman. The guy is arguably a first line winger on any other team in the NHL.
Oh, he is.
But, you know, like the last thing you want to do is misuse this guy at a crucial point of the season. We end up in a wild card spot because we're not scoring goals down the stretch at home and we're fucked because we got to go on the road. Mind you, we play better on the road, but we got to go to a barn that we don't want to necessarily play in. Like, it's one of those things where you're taking a lot away from the second line just because some guys are getting hot. And I know in hockey, you got to ride the hot hand sometimes. Fully understand that. Been a part of teams where that's happened a lot too. But I just think last night in a high stakes game, to give you a real understanding, or at least Leaf fans, a really good understanding what a Stanley Cup final could look like if it was against Vegas. Leafs aren't winning a 7-game series against Vegas, because that's how it's going to be played last night. And if Austin Matthews is fine with shooting the puck outside, on the outside of the entire zone, from the circles below the hash marks, he's not scoring against Vegas in a Stanley Cup scenario like that.
Not with those trees in front.
No. So, and the thing was, the Leafs didn't start the game bad. They had a great start.
Yeah.
They just weren't able to score right away. Whereas in Vegas, they had the same kind of start. They potted 3 goals right away. And it's like, okay, we can kind of like put in cruise control and take it easy. But all in all, there were a lot of good things last night. Just, I don't think Johnny T being on the third line is one of them. Unless you're just trying to pump up some trade value so you can get a Noah Hanifin or whoever the fuck you're trying to get before the deadline.
I wish. Imagine Hanifin, Leaf uniform.
Ooh, I mean, that'd be something.
Cost for, like, what would it cost for that to come in if you want Hanifin?
Yeah, I mean, as well, the one thing, so I praised Sheldon Keefe to start. Now I'm gonna good cop, bad cop. So last night, on this 7-game heater, again, Riley was injured for a couple games.
Suspended.
Injured. I'd like to think he was injured, but, you know, stupid rules. He was without TJ Brody coming back. First two games, he was with, it was either Benoit or McCabe. Unreal chemistry. It was like nothing. Last night, what does Keith do? He puts Riley with Brody again. Riley and Brody, -3 in the game. What was Simone Benoit? +1.
The crippler.
You got to be kidding me, man. Like, you know that it does not work. It has not worked all year, and yet you have the balls to put Riley and Brody back because what? Is that your shield? Is that like what you're comfortable with? Because you got to get out of the comfort zone. Just put Brody with either Lagesson or Giordano. And that sounds terrible. Brody and Giordano in 2024, that sounds awful. But Riley, the way he plays, the way he thinks, where I have to pinch, Brody is not that D anymore to be like, okay, man, you can go. I got this, because we all know Brody needs help. He's not that good in his own zone anymore. And puck control, God, forget about it. So just, that's my biggest gripe about last night, other than JT. You know that Brody and Riley have flaws together. Why put them together for a full 25 minutes? It makes no sense.
Well, I mean, at least a positive from last night in terms of Gio coming back for the first game since I believe his father passed away. Sucks to hear that. But he looked actually, you know, for a guy his age who hasn't played in however many games it was, he actually looked relatively good. Obviously, his minutes aren't going to be high, but he did look and did enough to earn his spot on the team for now until the deadline comes or whatever happens. But if there's one thing that this team has proven since the Riley suspension, Brody not playing and now coming back, is that the Jake McCabe and the Simone Benoit line is arguably our best defensive pairing on this team. And that sounds insane to even say that, considering we signed Benoit for like $750,000 and Jake McCabe is on like, I think it's like a $2.5 million deal or whatever it is. But these guys are playing like they're our best defensemen together for the system. So, I mean, that's a huge positive. But, you know, Alino, like, what do you think on that? Because, like, with the deadline looming, the Leafs rumored to get, it feels like, almost any other defenseman under the sun. But more than likely, it'll probably be coming from Calgary. Where do you think, you know, this defensive system is going to go moving forward? And what kind of lineups could we expect come trade deadline?
I would like to see, I know it's crazy, but Hanifin, you have to shoot for that. At least if you're the GM, you have to make the call. I know they'll probably be a little bit reluctant because, you know, you don't want to help your past GM all of a sudden get glory there and steal the guys that he probably like had a big hand in bringing along there, like Giordano, Brody, Hanifin. They already have chemistry. So if you had him on the Leafs, He knows how to play with three of those. Like, you have three of those guys intertwined with each other. It could work, but I think they're going to just look elsewhere, a cheaper defenseman, someone like under the radar. I don't think they'll spend too much. I think this year they're going to go after a forward again and probably like ship out an AHL guy with like a fifth round pick and maybe get like a sixth defenseman, that like a Benoit type of guy, that kind of money.
Well, sorry, Chris, before you chime in, this is for both of you guys, but Alino, I'm going to go to you first. What do you guys think about maybe like if the Leafs are able to swindle a deal and maybe get a guy like Rasmus Anderson from Calgary? I mean, a puck moving defenseman, he can skate, he can handle minutes. I don't know. I think it might be a good look, but I mean, I'm just throwing names at the dartboard here from Calgary. What do you think?
Just maybe Vancouver. Vancouver, just everyone from Calgary going to Vancouver. The only trade partner, though, I think. Anderson, Vancouver. Markstrom, maybe back to Vancouver. Hannafin, Vancouver.
He sees a lot of Swedes there. So yeah, sure, I'll go there. I just think every time I hear of a guy like an Anderson, I think of Gustavsson last year, and I get nightmares. Yeah. Like, I feel like if the Leafs were to get Erasmus Anderson,
he can at least
they won't though. Know how to fucking play him. They won't know. Like, look, Nick, look at the, we had Tyson Barry. The guy had 60 points on Colorado. He comes here. I don't know what the fuck happened. He had like 30 points, didn't play power play. Okay, I mean, you're fucking up. Then we get Gustavsson. The guy doesn't play for whatever reason. I think they played, it was either Brody or like Liljegren, they played someone else over him, and the guy was killing it beforehand in Washington. Now, by the way, he has like 40 points already in New York, so that's great. And then again, the whole Liljegren dynamic. Do you want Liljegren to go through what Sandin went through? Because at this point, why are we drafting D? Like, they're taking too long to develop because we fucking fizzle them. Yeah, you're going to be playing 14 minutes for 4 years straight. You're not going to develop properly. I'm not blaming Riley at all. I don't want anyone coming at me saying, well, Riley plays 40 minutes a night. It's like, no, Riley's our fucking guy. He's the Doughty of the team. We all know that. But if we get Rasmus Anderson, man, I'm terrified. I think like we'll play him 15 minutes a night and his just career will diminish after this. Because we've also been rumored to get Barry, and that's fucking dumb. No, that makes no fucking sense.
I'd say, no, we're not having him back. No.
That's stupid. I think what the Leafs need, and everyone has talked about this for years, it's either at the deadline, you got to go get a veteran goalie like a Marc-Andre Fleury or whoever the hell you're going to get.
Yeah, good luck with that.
Well, Minnesota said today that, I was going to bring this up on the next segment, but we're talking about it now.
We'll talk about it now. I'll bring up names after.
Yeah, they have said today that Fleury won't be on the market. He is not going to be moved. Unless someone calls him and gives a deal they can't refuse, then maybe he'll get moved, but I don't see him getting moved there after them saying that. But the Leafs really need a stay-at-home D. They need a guy that can fucking chip and chase, clear the zone, keep guys out from in front of the net, block shot, like old school stay at home, I'm your guy, don't worry about our zone defenseman. And the problem is like, yeah, we've drafted guys like Liljegren, Sandin, Morgan Riley, having Tyson Barry, even bringing in TJ Brody. They're all puck-moving defensemen that can skate, but you don't fucking need guys like that when you have arguably the most top-heavy offense in the NHL. Ultimately, okay, you're going to need defensemen that can skate, sure, and maybe pass the puck, but all they have to do is make an outlet fucking pass. Other than that, you just need them to fucking play D. So ultimately, yeah, they need a stay-at-home defenseman, whoever that might be come deadline day. We'll have to wait and see. But now we even got this goalie carousel that they got to figure out with Wall coming back. I mean, we got to thank Leaf fans, no matter who you are and what you think of Martin Jones, you got to thank that guy because he fucking saved our season. Even the way Sammy was playing on this road trip between him and Martin Jones, unbelievable. They got to get their credit, but now we got to figure out because Wall got recalled, so hopefully he'll be in net next week. But they got some fucking decisions they got to make. No matter how well we think we're playing, it just feels like we're not in it as much as we really are.
Well, the sad thing with Fleury is a year ago, Philip Gustafson was probably the best story in terms of goalies. He was killing it. I think he was like fifth in Vezina voting, and he lost the starting job. So Fleury, as of right now, is your starter in Minnesota. They're a wild card team. we saw what happened a week ago when they fucking potted 10 goals against Vancouver. They're kind of on a roll right now, and Fleury's confidence is at an all-time high because guess what? He's fucking starting.
Yep.
So I don't blame Fleury for saying, I'm not going anywhere. Because if the tables were turned like last year, I guarantee you if a team like LA calls, he's going there. So I got to give Fleury credit. It makes sense for him to stay. He's riding the full-on train with Minnesota. Will they make the playoffs? It's close, but as long as you have a guy like Eriksson Ek and Kaprizov, I think you're in good hands. But let's talk more about the deadline, because I want to quickly bring up these top heavy guys here. And Gunsel has been a name that has been in trade rumors, I'd say, for about maybe since the draft. Like, there's been like, is Dubas going to be busy? Is Dubas going to trade? I just think at this point in time, it's finally time to pull the trigger on Gunsel. He's a little bit injury prone, but when it comes to the playoffs, that's when he shines. If you're a team like Vancouver, if you're a team like, I don't know, New Jersey, you need a guy like Gunsel. Even, I hate to say this, Vegas. Like, if Gunsel can align with Eichel for 2.5 months, win a cup again, they go back to back, then Gensel's value goes from $9 million to $10 million. So if I'm Gunsel, sign me up for a West contender, because we all know the East is a little weak. I don't think Pittsburgh would allow him to go to Carolina. I just don't think that's in the cards. But what do you guys think about Jake Gunsel, him as a player? What do you think he brings, and where do you think he ends up? Because right now he's the number one guy on the trade bait board.
If I'm Pittsburgh, I don't just trade him for a guy to come in. Like, you need a lot of young talent to go in there. It's the only guy on your team that you can realistically trade to somewhat have a retool, rebuild situation where you can keep Crosby, you can keep Malkin, but you need to surround them with guys. Like, I think Arizona might actually be a crazy destination. You have younger players over there, maybe a Clayton Keller type of guy comes in, or some of their top prospects off the wing. I think you, if you're Dubas, you can't be screwing this up, because if you get fired from Pittsburgh because you mismanaged a team where you acquired Erik Karlsson to add onto like a former dynasty, it's going to be tough to find another job in this league.
He's definitely in a tough spot. But Arizona's not a bad shout. Vegas makes some sense considering how close they are. You know, one of them being a contender, obviously, but you know, they have the ability where they can access some LTIR stuff, so they can have the cap space to take on a guy like Gunsel. but another interesting team, I think, also with how hot they've been, and in terms of wanting to add maybe some depth for that real playoff push, is it maybe a team like Detroit? You know, because Detroit's really been rolling the pat, like, six-game heater. Patty Kane's looking like the Patty Kane of old. The Brinkett looks great. Larkin. They're all just meshing and flowing right now. So,
Gostis Bear.
You know, maybe you send some AHL guys that you're not too sure about right now. You send them the other way, and those guys might be able to actually play for Pittsburgh. Sure, you're not going to be that worried about it because Gensel's contract's up. You don't even know if he's going to sign with Detroit. You might be able to bring him back. But I think Detroit might be a little bit of a sleeper. I know a team that could really use a winger if they really want to be considered a true contender would be in Edmonton. But, I mean, considering what they would have to give up in order to get a Gunsel, I don't think they're going to clean house like that unless they know they really can win a cup. And with their goaltending, it's safe to say they're not even close. But stranger things have happened. Maybe even Colorado.
How about Winnipeg?
They
got the assets to trade for Gunsel.
Yeah, but I think Winnipeg is playing so, like, their team is more so set. It's kind of like how Vegas was last year, just before the deadline. They kind of caught fire. They were playing really good. And it's one of those things where it's like, if they're playing that well, do you really need to throw a new wrench into the toolbox? Because it might get all fucked up. Like, we've seen it happen. Teams have been like, fuck it, we need to go get a rental, and they go bust. Like,
Tarasenko. Like, they fucking went balls to the wall and they lose to New Jersey, a team with zero experience.
So a lot could go right and a lot could go wrong. And I mean, there are definitely teams that are a lot better with Gunsel. The Penguins, unfortunately, I don't see them being better without him, but they're in a spot where they definitely need to do, they need to do something. So it'll be interesting to see, though. Maybe Vancouver tries to get him because they got injuries galore, too. Anything can happen.
I would like to, honestly, I'm thinking of like a mock trade. I think Winnipeg makes the most sense just based on the fans are kind of losing faith in the team. It's crumbling pretty quick there. Vilardi's been a great addition. They fleeced LA in that trade.
Oh, yeah.
Like Dubois is not the third overall pick as advertised. Vilardi's a freak. Scheifele looks rejuvenated. Connor is a fucking animal. Monahan. Ehlers might be the fastest player in the fucking league.
Monahan is fitting right.
Oh, yeah. Oh my God. Beautiful. What a story.
I always loved his game. And then, you know, what happened, unfortunately, at the end there with Calgary, then Montreal, he couldn't really find his stride. And then he ends up in Winnipeg. And dude, it's just clicking for him. Like,
he's got 19 goals already. Yeah.
They might be struggling to sell tickets right now.
I don't know how, but.
Well, I mean, Winnipeg's not that big of a city. You know, people aren't making as much money as they are here in Toronto in some instances. So it's probably a little bit tougher, but at least they got a product that they can put on the ice and they're not Arizona or Anaheim because they actually look like come playoff time. It's going to be the Winnipeg whiteout. It'll be empty in Winnipeg, but
I just think with Winnipeg, like we talked about when we were talking about Cutter Gauthier, the best player on that World Junior team was McGroarty.
Yep.
He's on Winnipeg. Does Winnipeg right now really need McGroarty? No, they don't. Do they really need Brad Lambert? I went to the Marlies game where they played Brad Lambert. That guy does not belong in the AHL. He is skating circles around everybody. If I'm Kyle Dubas and I see those two names in Winnipeg's farm system, I am trying my hardest to at least get one of them, maybe a first, and maybe, I don't know, maybe a high Nola or a Logan Stanley, just another D to bring to this team because Dubas has to understand that the glory days in Pittsburgh are over. As great as Crosby's been playing, they're over.
Yeah, Stanley's a truck and a fucking tree.
He's a big boy. Hey, but you know, Winnipeg's not stupid either. They know what they have. They're not gonna for a rental. Like, well, let's be honest. I don't see them moving either of those guys for a rental. As great as Guentzel is on a team like that, I don't see them moving them for a rental at all. Like another guy that actually before Chris goes to the bait board and looks at who we're going to talk about next, I saw something interesting in terms of Nashville. There was an article today that came out with from Pierre LeBrun and Barry Trotz, and you know they recently had their six-game winning streak as well recently, or they've won some games after some really poor form. And Pierre asked Barry what his thoughts were about the deadline coming up. And, you know, Barry was honest. He's like, yeah, you know, we've had a good run of form recently. We're winning some games that we shouldn't be. But I got to be honest. I got to be on the fence with this. And I'm listening to everything. And if it makes sense, it's going to get done. We got to look at it from a business standpoint. And if we're not making the playoffs this year, if we're just going to miss out and there's contracts that we need to cut, if we need to make trades and offers are good, we're going to do it. So it's not that far-fetched. I said before we started the pod that maybe UC Soros could be on the move because there are teams that need goalies. Roman Josi could be on the move.
Like, no.
You just don't know.
You can't trade Roman Josi. That's like the Kings trading Doughty when they were in the shit a couple of years. Like you're not trading a guy like that.
But hearing a quote like that from The Athletic, from a guy like Barry Trotz, who's really good when it comes to his word, anything goes and anything can happen. I'm not saying Roman Josi, but to name a few names from that organization that could be moved or linked to a move, anything's possible at this point.
I think anybody is acceptable except Roman Josi. He's the guy that just you can't trade him. He had almost 100 points.
Hey, yeah. we
he might have surpassed Shea Weber as the best defenseman in Nashville history.
But we were saying that for a long time about Shea Weber, and then all of a sudden PK Subban's going to Nashville and Shea Weber's going the other way. Now, obviously, that was a different time.
That was a one-for-one. That was fucked. You won't see that ever. Like in this, what, you're going to trade Roman Josi for Leon Dreis? Like, it doesn't happen.
I don't know. I'm just spitballing here. I'm just spitballing. But go ahead. Go to the bait board.
I guess we'll talk Soros. Soros is number four on the list. I think, obviously, if you're New Jersey, they're still trying to fight for the playoffs, but you look at their goaltending, it's shit. They get Soros. A lot of teams are in trouble.
I just don't think like that's a big move if you're Trotz, and you have to make sure that you have another guy lined up, because if your team is planning on having a playoff success even like the following year, who's going to be that guy in net? That's the toughest part. That
I mean, they got Askarov. He's killing the AHL, but again, AHL and NHL are two different things. You really don't know how he can go. He could be a Carter Hart. He could be amazing the first year and then struggle the next three. Or he could be a fucking Murray.
He might.
You really don't know.
But he might even be hopeful in terms of, because if they're not making the playoffs this year, I haven't looked at the standings, seeing if they're in a wild card or not. But if they're out of it and they have their eyes on some free agent goaltenders coming up this year, then you know what? If you can clear the books out towards the end of the year and make some cap space, then maybe he likes a goalie that he thinks he can get on a good deal that can work going down the road, and that can be a big thing. But Soros to Jersey, that'd be terrifying. The only thing is they're not tough enough. This year they've really shown like the baby Leaf syndrome, if you want to call it that, because that's the closest thing I could say they're relatable to, with how offensive they are and how good they are, but they're just not tough enough to back themselves up or at least get themselves off the wall when they're in that dogfight. It's the same thing people are noticing a little bit too with Vancouver. You beat up on Vancouver at the beginning of the game, they're not fighting back, and you're up 3-4 goals and the game's over. So, you know, the Leafs have kind of grown from that, and we're seeing that grit this year more than ever. And I think Soros would be interesting, but another name that's linked to Jersey in terms of goaltending is Markstrom. I saw today that I believe it was BR Open Ice or it was Sportsnet on Instagram. They confirmed that Markstrom would give the okay on his to waive his no trade to go to New Jersey if that was a thing and if it did become a thing. So that would be interesting too. Either one of them is an upgrade. Obviously, Soros is a much higher upgrade than Markstrom, but I mean, they definitely need help in that regard, but they also need to get tougher, but that's a whole other thing.
I mean, every team has flaws. Yeah. You can't really sit down and tell me it. The only team I'll say right now that doesn't have a flaw is probably Florida, and they went to the Stanley Cup final. So, I mean, like, the Rangers have flaws. The even Dallas has flaws. We saw the other night they got boat raced by Colorado. Like, teams have flaws in this league. I think New Jersey, they have to start with their goaltending. They have to. Like, you cannot tell me that they are a great team or sub-contender with Nico Daws and Vanecek. And you can't tell me that. Like, as great of a story was last year when Vanecek and Daws were stealing wins against Shesterkin. Like, to this day, it doesn't make any sense, but it happened. They had Tarasenko, too, and Patrick Kane on that team. I don't know how, but if they can somehow manage to get Markstrom and not give up too much, I'm probably doing the Markstrom over Soros, because you look in their system, man, like they have Nemich, they have Luke Hughes, they have Seamus Casey. They have a lot of good, really good prospects where, let's say, a Dawson Mercer, Alex Holtz doesn't pan out, you're kind of in trouble. And then you look at the way they're structured, like the Leafs. Yeah, the first two lines are fucking money. What about everything else?
Yep.
So I agree with the Leaf structure there. I think if you get Markstrom, you don't give up too much, then that makes more sense. Whereas if you fucking go for Soros, you trade maybe a Mercer and two other prospects, you don't know. You really don't know what the goal is. That's the whole thing with what Alina was saying.
Yeah, no, you're right.
Like, on both sides, if you're Nashville, you bring up Askarov, he could be shit. You trade Soros, the team that gets Soros, he could be terrible. You have no idea what goalies in this league. What, the average goalie's averaging, what, like a 9-10 save? Goal like scoring Dr. is up Kemper. A fucking... oh my God, Kevin. I was just going to say that too. If Colorado's smart, you can go get Soros. You could trade Sam Girard. You could trade Bowen Byram. You don't need Bowen Byram. You got Cale Makar. You don't need Byram.
You know, you need Bowen Byram, man. Yeah. Okay, Cale Makar is Cale Makar. No one's going to argue that. But in that system...
Devon Taves...
It's a complimentary.
Like, fuck, man. Like, Byram is, I hate to say this. I don't want to say it. Bowen Byram right now is what Sandin was in Toronto.
Oh. No, he's better than that. He's better than that.
He's
an
expendable piece in the...
like, come on, dude. Like, fourth overall, they had no business getting the fourth pick in that draft, first of all. And I think it's kind of like... Byram's playing 15 minutes a night. Go to Nashville, be with Roman Josi. There you go. You're a fucking franchise D. Right now, he's fucking floundering.
It's like circuit.
He's in Caleb. Yeah, that's exactly what it is. Thank you.
I don't know, man. I just think he's... Bowen Byram suits the way Colorado plays. He's able to skate with the puck. He's able to play defense. He has a wicked shot. His hands aren't that bad. If you think about it, if you have having those four guys in your system, a Girard, a Taves, Makar, and Byram, you're laughing. You have a better core four on defense than the entire league. Do you really need to do they really need to trade him? No, they don't. If they want to get Saros, yeah, you're going to have to trade him. Or you're going to have to find somebody else that's as expendable. But I don't think he's, for his upside and where he is in his career, he's not worth trading. That's like us saying when Mo finally had his breakout year, when we lost to Columbus?
The lockout year?
Yeah, the 17
or
points.
The COVID year.
COVID. Yeah. Like when Mo really became Mo and... The team more or less became his before John Tavares came after Dion left. That's like saying, okay, we're going to trade Morgan Riley so that we can have no defenseman and we'll bring in a Vezina winning goalie. Like it doesn't make sense. Like for that
if
point.
If Byram becomes Riley, I will bookmark this episode. Because I'm telling you
he has a Stanley Cup. It doesn't matter at this point.
No, but I'm telling you, if Byram gets traded, he can be a Riley. Yeah, if he stays on this team,
I'm not denying
he will not be anything more than a Augustus Bear.
No, he's better. That's a hot take, Chris. He's better than that.
That's a hot take. Not Augustus Bear.
No, not Augustus Bear, man. That's a low blow for him. Like, come on now.
I got to see him average 20 minutes first. Well, because he's not getting that here. That's my point. If you're Colorado, you look at their roster right now. But who's their backup? Altonen? Like, I don't even know who the fuck he is. But Kemper has an .895 save. If you get UC Saros or even fucking Markstrom, they're fucking cup contenders.
Yeah, but you don't need to give up Bowen Byram to get Markstrom.
No.
You don't. You don't.
Okay, there. That's fair. But UC Saros, yeah, you might have to. And you know that they have more of a relationship with Girard than Byram. You know that.
Yeah, but here's the thing, though. Byram has the perfect game to be the second option from a Cal Makar because he's a lower tier, a much lower tiered Cal Makar. He is. He has the facets of the game that are similar, but he's not Cal Makar. So if Cal Makar gets hurt, which has happened in the past, Bowen Byram, in more ways than not, has filled the gap. And he has played with Devin Taves and had success.
I mean,
I'm not wrong.
Even Devin Taves is a better offensive player than Byram. And Byram should be better right now. But that's Chris, because of the development.
It's easy to be a better offensive defenseman when you're playing with Cal Makar. It doesn't matter who. You could put Ryan Suter there now and he'd be a better offensive defenseman.
Devin Taves was really good in New York. Like, he was good in New York. He was the Noah Dobson before Dobson got there. He was like the guy that's like, I'll hold the spot for a year or two. Dobson, it's your fucking team after.
He did what Johnny Boychuk did when he went to the Islanders after
Boychuk's
after the Bruins. No, because Boychuk became the guy that was the go-to guy on the power play in terms of his shot. He held the fort and that was it. When Devin Taves went to the Islanders, he more or less did the same thing. He filled the gap. He realized he wasn't going to be the guy and then he left. Bowen Byram's not going to do that because Bowen Byram knows he can win cups by staying where he is.
Regardless. Nishushkin, I think if you're Colorado, the guys that would have to get traded for Saros, you have to start with either Byram or Nishushkin.
Nishushkin, he's more of a problem.
But again, if you're Nashville, you're trading your franchise goalie. Do you really want Nishushkin? No, probably not. So you're probably going to ask for Byram. But again, I think when you look at... like I'll give another example, and I think it just... Byram, if he can get to what Sergachev, because Sergachev, when he was in Montreal, dude wasn't sniffing 20 minutes a night. He was behind Weber. He was behind Weber and I think Petrie, because they had a fucking infatuation with Petrie.
Well, they were all big and they could actually, you wouldn't think that that core defenseman could skate well. They were able to skate well for their size. And that's why Sergachev wasn't sniffing minutes.
And then what does Tampa do? They do the fucking heist of the century.
I cannot believe that's still
they trade Drouin.
What the fuck?
To this day. To this day.
Sergachev for Drouin. Are you fucking... God. That's the one trade where...
That's the Habs falling in love with the French Canadians coming
Jonathan
home.
Jonathan Drouin.
Like, oh, Tabernacle. Then come to Montreal.
I could already picture Yzerman when he made that deal. He's hanging up with the biggest smile. He's like, holy fuck, we just got our next headman.
Well, that... Dude, that's a guy that's laughing now. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Oh, now, now Stevie Detroit,
he's like, I'm back home. I signed Patrick Kane.
We're on a six-game heater.
He signed him for technically nothing. I got the Brinket. I got Doc. Not Doc. I got Larkin. I got all the pieces I need. Maybe I go get a goalie because they could use a goalie if we're being honest.
They got James Reimer in that.
I love it. They're playing with no flaws right now in their game.
It sucks to say because they're chasing us, but yet you can't hate that team. Yeah. Like the way they are, like it's like, can I hate Patrick Kane? Nah, I can't. Can I hate Reimer? Nah, I can't.
They might go get another defenseman, believe it or not. Even though their defensive core is the way they're playing right now, I wouldn't touch that team with a 10-foot pole.
Sider's unreal.
Oh, yeah. If you're a hockey fan, Sider's a fucking freak.
Sider, Raymond, Rasmus. Dude, that whole team right now is...
Fuck Raymond. I forgot about Raymond.
That whole team right now is on another level, and they're getting... the results.
So before we don't have a lot of time left. I want to just quickly talk about Ottawa because their season has been a fucking write-off. Yeah. There's rumors that Chychrun's available, Tarasenko's available, and they might be interested in getting some calls for Claude Giroux.
But Claude Giroux's not going anywhere. He's at home there. I'm going to say this. Say Vegas or Colorado. Just for argument, or no, let's say this. Let's say Edmonton and Colorado are for sure going to be one of the two teams that are going to win the cup this year. If it was like the NFL and Claude Giroux is looking at the script and he knows who's going to win.
The script.
No. Because if he knows that he's going to go to a cup contender and he's going to win the Stanley Cup, like he knows 100% for sure, it's the only way he's getting traded. I don't see him leaving Ottawa. He's at home. He's actually been playing relatively good hockey considering where he was at the end of his Philly stint and the beginning of the Ottawa stint. You know, he's settled in. He's playing with the guys. He's got the chemistry, but I don't see him moving. Tarasenko, you got to ship that fucking guy out because it's just not working. That team, the way that team is built, it reminds me of like a much bigger Florida team with no goalie and shittier defensemen.
Way shittier defense.
But they're not getting results, and you'd figure in the division they're in, they would just bully teams into getting wins, and they're fucking struggling to do that. Like, it's bad. Like, what, do you trade your captain at this point? Because
No.
But, dude, he seems to be a bit of the problem.
No.
He seems to be a bit of the problem.
No.
Uh-huh. I don't know. I would just, like, Tarasenko, even when he signed there, I thought, like, where's the fit? That was a really random signing. So, like, Tarasenko, I think there's still value in him. I'd like to see him on a much better team that complements his strengths more than Ottawa. So
Carolina.
Yeah, Carolina would be a really good one. Winnipeg, maybe, if he goes there for cheap.
If I'm Winnipeg, I'm not going to lie.
They're
If I'm Winnipeg, I'm looking
If Nick was Winnipeg's GM, he's not fucking trading anybody.
Tarasenko,
there's only one or two guys I'm trading if I am the Winnipeg Jets. If I can get Jake Guentzel, I'm doing that. And then if I can get another forward, that would be
Mangiapane.
He's too expensive. You're not gonna get him. You'd have to go to like Arizona or even Anaheim and be like, hey. Like Adam Henrique to Winnipeg, that would make perfect sense for them.
He's getting 5.8 mil, I don't think.
Oh, Tarasenko, 5.
Oh, Henrique.
No, Henrique. The only thing is his contract.
That's a lot.
But him in that system would work really well.
I agree. I think Duclair, like he's here, 3.8 mil, 3 mil. Like, you know what would be hilarious? If Duclair goes back to Florida.
He's not going back to Florida. No.
I don't think they'll trade for him again because then he'll probably in the back of his mind say, if I go back there, I'm going to be the scapegoat now because they're trading for me thinking
that's true. Yeah.
I'm going to be that guy. So I think you should avoid it.
I mean, if you're Tampa and you want to add a really good depth forward, even though they don't fucking need anybody.
They don't.
Then maybe you could trade for Duclair. But they should be trying to get a defenseman to fill that Sergachev hole.
I think, like, we're going to end the pod here. I think, like, Chychrun is a guy where they traded for him and they thought that they would be in. I mean, I thought they would be at least bubble team by now. And they are second last in our, I think they're second last in our division and they're third last in the East. And the teams behind them, like Columbus and Montreal, like they should be. But Ottawa should be, I at least expected they would be where Detroit is right now. Like okay, you're not going to jump Boston, Toronto, or Florida, but you are in consideration for the playoffs with the guys they have.
100%.
But my biggest thing was signing Korpisalo. What was that, man? That was a blunder. You could have had someone better. And then, of course, the whole, they don't have an identity on the back end. You know, you have Chabot, Chychrun, basically ego versus ego. You don't know who the number one D is there. And then you have Branstrom, who's been a bust, unfortunately. So many fucking flaws. The Pinto incident. Like, it's just, there's so much. And this is why Brady Tkachuk is not the problem. Timmy Stutzel is definitely not the problem. People were saying he was a bust a couple years ago. Guy put up 90 last year. He's not the problem. If you're smart, you try and fiddle and maybe bait in a team to get a Josh Norris. See what you can get in return for him. Yeah, he's a former 35, I think, goal scorer. But hey, man, at this point, if you're Ottawa, first is Tarasenko. That guy has to go. Try and get maybe a first or a second or someone. Chychrun, you know, it sucks. It didn't work out. I think if he can go to like a Tampa Bay, that's terrifying. If he can go to a Carolina, that's terrifying. There's just not a lot of teams in the league that I feel are elite. That's basically my argument for this deadline. I'll say there's maybe six teams out there that are full balls to the wall buyers. Everyone else, it's like, yeah, he'd look good on our team, but I don't know where we're going to be in 2 years. So this is going to be a fun deadline.
It's not even a 2 year window, Chris. I don't even know where we're going to be this time next year or even after free agency.
Exactly. I could say that for like the Minnesotas, the Nashvilles, the Seattle.
You could say that for half of Washington.
There's so many teams.
Half of the league, you could say that, because all it takes is for a bad start to a season, a couple of injuries that even slow the season down even further. And it's like, well, look at our salary. Look where we are. Got some nice draft studs coming through. I think we're going to sell and tank, and maybe we'll get a nice lottery pick.
And another team that's in that position, is, you guys are going to laugh at me, Buffalo. Like, they could be amazing next year, and I would not be surprised.
Well, before we end the podcast, I do think one team that we should talk about, because they probably will try to get somebody to fill a hole that they do have on their second line, and that's Edmonton. They don't have that winger to go on that Draisaitl line. Is it a Guns? Is it a Guentzel? Is it somebody else? Like, because if you're Edmonton, if there is a time to win, it's when Zach Hyman's leading your team in goals and Connor McDavid's just trying to get as many assists as he can. Because either than this year, minus the goaltending, with the way their scoring is looking, it seems like it might be the perfect storm for them to actually go and win a cup and say Zach Hyman wins a fucking Conn Smythe, because he's just scoring more goals than everybody else. So he would in turn win that. Who would fill that hole? Because they need someone to fill that hole.
It's a guy that I want the Leafs to go after, but we'll say, let's have Edmonton go after him. Jordan Eberle.
I knew it.
They're going to bring him home. They're going to bring Ebs home. They're going to
bring him back. When the Islanders were going on their run, I made a bold claim that he was going to win the Conn Smythe. Jesus. He carried that fucking team.
Yep.
He's clutch. We all saw the moment that Pierre Maguire, thankfully they edited that shit out, because he ruined the moment when Gord said, can you believe it? And he said, I can, literally 2 seconds later. Ruined the moment.
Yep.
Fucking guy should have been booted off the booth. But yeah, Eberle, I think you bring him back in. Edmonton would embrace him. If you can work out a way to like make them retain some salary in Seattle, they're still freshly into the league. So. Yeah.
I don't see
why draft picks would work.
Yeah, I don't see why Seattle wouldn't be able to retain salary either. Yeah. Because if you take his contract off that team, their salary floor, they're relatively close. So they should retain 50%. You throw him a draft pick, maybe a bubble guy that
a like, few first. You might have to do a first rounder if you want them to retain. I think he's like 5.
He's playing amazing too.
Okay, so if say you do something like that, say you send a first round pick. A bubble guy on the AHL team.
Shane Wright.
And No, but like crazier things have happened. I would love to see Jordan Eberle on that second line with Leon,
because
that would be their power play would be absolutely terrifying.
But just seeing Nugent Eberle,
and he was the start of that rebuild. Like,
yeah,
a lot of people forgot. Like, they were so shit that this is like their second rebuild on the first rebuild. So Jordan Eberle kicked that shit off.
It's almost
their rebuild is like a Star Wars fucking saga.
Oh my god!
It is.
He's the prequel, and now they got their fucking main.
then they get their fucking golden boy and Taylor Hall. Then they get Yakupov, and then like fuck, man.
Well, because then it was Eberle, and then it's like no, it's not going to be Jordan. It's going to be Nugent Hopkins, and then Nugent Hopkins became like a Ryan Smith, just consistent and was great. And then he has his amazing pop off year last year, and then
no one was surprised with that.
No, but
you're going to get 100 if you play with McDavid.
It took some time for him, and then it's like no, we got the savior, we got Connor McDavid. Now we're built like the 1980s Wayne Gretzky Oilers team. It's like, okay, you guys haven't won a cup yet. Calm down. But if they get Eberle now, I'd be terrified of that team. I would be terrified.
See, like I was going to say Eberle, but you know, another name, like this guy doesn't get the love. Buchnevich. He's on the Blues. He's last 3 years, he's averaging about 70 points per 82, which is insane. If he can go to Edmonton, they can work out some way. Because again, if you're trying to get Guentzel, you probably have to trade Ryan McLeod or Dylan Holloway. I don't know if they want to do that. No, dude, Guentzel's unreal.
No, but I know, but like...
Yeah, like if I'm Edmonton, yeah. I'm not doing that. So rentals are expensive nowadays, especially if you're a guy like Guentzel who can produce. But I think Buchnevich, I think Eberle, that's a phenomenal pick. I think that would be perfect. But I do like Buchnevich just because you look at their second line, it's too fucking gritty. Like, I love them bringing in Corey Perry. You have Evander Kane. Those two guys are really, really gritty. They can score. But when it comes to the playoffs, you also need a little bit of speed on the top six. Eberle is fast, but Buchnevich, I think, is a little bit faster, a little more skilled. But Eberle, man, he's got the clutchness that basically nobody has on Edmonton other than the top three guys.
Yeah.
So I love him. I think Eberle would be my number one. But if I'm like... If I'm really, really adventurous, if I'm Edmonton, and let's say Guentzel goes early, I think Buchnevich would be a great shout for the Edmonton Oilers.
That is an interesting pick. That's definitely off the board. I was not thinking about that. He would fit the system. He's got the speed. He's got the hands. I mean, ultimately, it's just a matter of waiting and seeing, because even if I'm them, if I can get a goalie, I'd be happy with just getting a goalie and just figuring out that hole at a later date. But... Like you guys have listened to and heard us talk about ad nauseum for the past 45 minutes, it feels like. The deadline is going to be quite an interesting thing. Hopefully it leads up to the hype that is expected and it's not a dud on the day when we're waiting for trades to happen and nothing happens. Because that's been the trend, unfortunately, the last few years. Hopefully we get a few trades leading up to a nothing too big and then we get the blockbusters on the day of the deadline. But that was a great episode, guys. I'm really happy with, you know, how... We were able to talk about the deadline, the Leafs, and of course, that pay-per-view that happened the past weekend. That was a great episode, guys. Thank you for tuning in and listening. If you followed and watched all the way to the end, we always appreciate you guys. Make sure you follow us and watch us on Spotify, YouTube, and everywhere else you get your podcasts. Make sure you check us out on Instagram at In The Zone. Thanks again, guys. This is Nick signing off for In The Zone. Thanks again, guys. Peace.